Good afternoon, Los Angeles and all of Southern California. I'm Farley Malaris, and you're listening to Astrological Metaphysical Radio, the phenomenon of the 80s, on KFOX 93.5 FM, your talk alternative. I remain Farley Malaris, and welcome to yet another edition. Yet another, and yet another edition. Some people out there are going, darn, he's still on the air. And other people are going, yay! Anyway, we've got an astrology topic for you today. And this topic is on planetary vibrations. And I am going to show you how I analyze planets in the natal chart and what I look for when I combine energies. So you have Mars in Scorpio, you say, and it's square Uranus in Leo. Well, you might think it's Mars in Scorpio, but when it's square Uranus in Leo, it can act like Mars in Leo or Mars in Aquarius, because Uranus is the lord of Aquarius. So we're going to find out the different colors and the different vibrations that planets take on depending on where they sit in your chart and how they relate to other planets in the birth chart. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year and Happy Halloween, and congratulations on the new baby and on the new marriage and whatever you're doing, whatever it is this time of day or this time of year. Hallelujah. Yeah. Rejoice and thank God that you're okay and that you're surviving these weird transits. I love looking at charts. They're fun. They are. You know, when I was a baby in astrology and I looked at charts, 1975, 76, it was like Greek. What I was sort of like was like a kid before Christmas that wanted to get his presents and open them before the timing was right. We're talking 15 years later or something like that, and I'm there. I've opened the presents, and I'm having a great time. I'm celebrating. It's Christmas Day. Because now I can look at a chart, and I would like to think that I, as an astrologer, can look at the chart and see things that only a percentage of people that might look at charts on this planet might see. And some of those things that I love to look at are planetary combinations, planetary vibrations, the rays and the colors that the planets give off. You see, when you analyze a person's uniqueness, when you want to pinpoint this illusion of separation that an individual has chosen, and you really want to get down to the fingerprint of their soul, how's that for a word? You want to get down to their cell circuit. You really want to get down to their ultimate vibration in this lifetime. In other words, you want to know what makes them tick. And I know a lot of you out there, and we have a tremendous audience filled with Virgo vibration out there, suns, moons, risings, Venus, and Mars. And do you know why that is? It's because, number one, Virgo is a very open-minded vibration. So it's open to things like astrology and metaphysics. Number two, when the Virgo vibration discovers this type of truth and this type of evidence, it basks in it. It dives feet first into it. Because the Virgo vibration is an analytical vibration that wants to know how things work, what makes them tick. All of us have Virgo factor in our chart because all of us have a planet Mercury. And I have a planet Mercury also in Leo, and it is conjunct my Sun and conjunct my Pluto. Mercury being the lord of Virgo and Gemini, conjunct the lords of Leo and Scorpio. And squaring my moon, the lord of Cancer, in the sign of Scorpio, my planet is also trying my Jupiter in Sagittarius, which happens to be the lord of Sagittarius. So my Mercury is busy. But when you analyze anyone's Mercury, you can actually analyze how they think and the way their mind works and what type of mental stimulation they might require in their lives, how deep they might go, how intelligent they are, how foolish or crazy or lunatical they might be. So you can take in astrology, there's no such thing as crazy. There's different. See, there's a strange combination of astrological energies that other people that have charts that are based on logic and practicality might look at as off balance or weird or strange or a little out of sync. But still, when we talk about analyzation of planets, we must understand that we can actually get the feeling of the way people are by analyzing and by looking deeply at the natal planets of their birth. That's why whenever I tell you to get your astroscope, I want you to take that first step and get involved in that beginning investigation of your own soul, of your own cell circuit, of this mission, of this adventure that you have chosen as your unique experience in this realm. And the astrological vibration that babies absorb at birth when they're born is a perspective of a metaphysical ray that bathes the body and stays with it its entire life cycle. We actually have tiny universes in each and every one of our cells. See, we believe in the philosophy as above, so below. So the macroverse can actually be reduced to fit right into the microverse. So in that way, your cells are a reflection of the universe at birth. And that's what the magic of the astrological effect is at birth. See, so if we can understand one single planetary vibration in your chart, then we can understand why you tick or how you tick. I mean, look at how complicated my Mercury is. Give me a break. You know, I have, let's count them. I have two conjunctions from the Sun and Pluto, right? That means when I was born, Mercury was right in line from the Sun and the Earth to Pluto. Okay, so they were all lined up. I also had my Mercury in square to the Moon and in trine to Jupiter. So my Mercury is having a relationship with, count them, four planets, Sun, Pluto, Moon, and Jupiter. Now, if you want to know basically how I think, we start off with the fact that Mercury is in Leo. So I think a lot about my family and my father, because those are things that embrace the energy of Leo. And Mercury also resides in my 10th house. So Mercury, the planet of communication, would reveal a vibration inside of this child, Farley Malaris, that would promote a career involved with communications. Hence the fact that I've always been a salesman, a teacher, a philosopher, and a counselor. So I use my mind and I use my voice, and I like to keep it interesting and fun from the Leo vibration. Now, we combine the fact that the Sun is sitting right on top of Mercury, which gives it like a triple Leo whammy, which means not only do I like to do things outspoken and extrovert and enthusiastic in career, but I also like to make it extremely fun and exciting, so super Leo vibration. And then we get Pluto conjunction to that Mercury, and the entire occult network falls in. And we understand, now we know why Farley is into metaphysics. And I don't know if you know this or not, but prior to this career, I was involved in a Masters and Johnson type career. So Pluto also rules sex. And I was also into career counseling and product development as far as developing things to help people with their bodies and understanding themselves, their sexual selves and their love lives. So I went from a Pluto, as far as human intimacy is concerned, to a Pluto, the occult. But we still combine the Sun, the Pluto, with the Mercury, and then we add the Moon, a square to that Moon, because it's in Scorpio. So there's a tremendous amount of Scorpio vibration added to that Leo. Now, if you wondered why there's a Leo-Scorpio production in this show now, it's because of all the Leo-Scorpio energy in my chart. Not only am I a Leo with a Scorpio Moon, but my Leo Sun is square my Scorpio Moon, which makes it like unto a Scorpio Sun. I want to tell you something. Whenever you have a planet in square to another planet in your chart, that means that that vibration from where the sign is squaring it is coming from is a supplement to the sign the planet's already in. Let's show you that. Let's say you have Mars in Virgo, and that Mars is square Neptune in Sagittarius, which is what somebody might have if they were very young, like 7 or 8 years old. So it's a Mars square Neptune. Well, because Neptune is the lord of Pisces, okay, and because Neptune is in the sign of Sagittarius, not only is that person going to act the way a person with Mars in Virgo would act, but they would be just as confused and deluded as a person with Mars and Pisces might act, and experimental and idealistic, and then because of the Neptune, right? And they would also be very independent, very philosophical, and sometimes extremely hard to get close to because Neptune is in the sign of Sagittarius. So whenever we take a look at a planet in a chart, depending on what planets are aspecting it, and if you want to know what aspects are, if you want to know what the definition of a planetary aspect is, and you know nothing about astrology, I'll tell you what it is. The planets form various angular relationships to Earth, which are called aspects. And we imagine an aspect as the blending of the rays of two planets. Now, there are five major aspects which come from dividing the zodiac, which is a circle, by 1, by 2, and 4, and by 3, and 6. Dividing the circle of the zodiac in half gives us the opposition aspect, which is 180 degrees. And this is when two planets are on opposite sides of the Earth. creating a 180-degree separation, and that is called an opposition. The reverse of the opposition is called the conjunction, and this occurs when two planets are lined up one behind the other in what we call the same degree of longitude. So they would be located in the same area of space. So if you looked out in space and you saw two lights together, maybe if you had a telescope, you could see Saturn and Uranus. You could see Uranus too and Neptune. You would see they were all lined up in conjunction to each other right now in Capricorn. Dividing the circle by one-third gives us a trine, which is a 120-degree aspect, and a triangle is the strongest straight-sided geometrical shape. And the trine is the most harmonious astrological aspect. Three planets, each 120 degrees apart within orb, form what is called a grand trine. And dividing the trine in half gives us what is called a sextile, which is 60 degrees. And dividing the opposition in half gives us what is called the square, which is 90 degrees. So we have conjunction, we have sextile, we have square, we have trine, we have opposition. Some people like the 150-degree aspect, which is when one planet in one sign is five signs away from another planet. That is called an inconjunction or a quinx. Basically, quinxes, oppositions, and squares reveal karma. Quinxes will reveal a karma of energies that are alien, which means that they're like water and oil. We have two elements in the chart that just don't mix. So for that reason, dealing with certain incidents in our life, people will see us as different, and sometimes they will feel that we don't mix with them. That's what quinxes do. Oppositions are elements in the chart, karmically speaking. They occur because people are into challenges, into taking risks, into running long odds. These are people that might bet the long shot at the races or try to get married to someone they know is either wrong for them or down deep really is not going to appreciate them. So opposition set up karma of tremendous transition because we are setting up situations in our lives that usually will result in a painful transformation of some kind. Squares are karma with the self. This is all self-esteem and stress and spiritual centering and balancing or lack of it. On the other hand, the sextiles and the trines are what we call dharmic, D-H-A-R-M-I-C. And I believe, from my study of astrology, that we have sextiles and trines in our chart because of deeds we have done in past lives, because of duty we have embraced in past lives to help others and perform services to help guide people into spiritual truths. So I really think we get more squares and oppositions the more work we have to be done, and the more trines and sextiles we get, there's more ease or flow of energy. Conjunctions can go either way, depending how the conjunction itself is aspected with trines and sextiles and squares and oppositions will tell us about whether it is a karmic conjunction or a dharmic conjunction. Now, let's take some further examples. Let's say we have an individual that has Venus in Capricorn. Venus in Capricorn, and that Venus is square Uranus in Cancer. Now, this individual, what we'll see now, people will say, well, first of all, we have to find out what Venus means. Just like Mercury, we figure out and we intricately analyze how one thinks and communicates. Venus tells us the soft spot. Venus tells us what the person wants and desires and craves and needs and loves and feels nourished by. And once again, we look at everything that is connected to that planet to analyze it. The fact that Venus is in Capricorn, a sign that rules career and practicality and logic and Spock-like dedication. And also Capricorn is a sign of martyrdom, where these people often need to climb the highest mountain or swim the deepest sea in order to get what they really want. And that might be one exhausting ordeal to do. So Capricorn energy people usually put themselves on the line. They volunteer or they stick their necks out. So that's point number one. Now this person happens to be a Libra rising, and that would throw Venus in Capricorn over there in the fourth house. Now, the fourth house vibration is a Cancerian vibration. So now we combine all this energy of martyrdom and ambition and success and career and logic from Capricorn with the sensitivity and the need to be in the home from Cancer. So we see this person likes to work at home, just like all Libra risings naturally have the sign of career on the fourth house cusp, which means a lot of Libra risings like to work at home. If this Libra rising have Venus and Capricorn in the fourth house, there's an emphasis. It means that even if they have a job or work somewhere else, they're going to probably still have another job or do lots of homework in the career at home. So we give that vibration a Cancerian effect. Also makes this person extremely sensitive and emotional and motherly from the Cancerian vibration. So we've already combined the fact that Venus is in Capricorn and it's in the Cancerian house in the fourth house. Its opposition Uranus in Cancer. So there's another Cancer vibration. Venus is in Capricorn and its opposition Uranus in Cancer, which somebody might have in the 50s, right? And the Uranus in Cancer happens to be in the 10th house. So we see that this person goes through a tremendous amount of karma concerning home, residence, and career, connected with their emotions, and connected with their security. And because Uranus is the Lord of Aquarius, we find that this Venus can be just as cold and hot as a typical Venus in Aquarius. Isn't that interesting? The planet starts out in Capricorn. In the fourth house, it shifts to Cancer. And because it's opposition, the planet Uranus, in the 10th house, Uranus, Lord of Aquarius, we find this person to be extremely, extremely Aquarian in nature as far as what they really appreciate. Friends, what do they want? They're obsessed with friends. They're obsessed with goals. They're obsessed with intelligence. All those things that epitomize Aquarian ethic. Humanity. And they suffer through the whole thing because it's an opposition. So they suffer with having perfection in friendships, and they suffer with trying to accomplish their goals. And on top of that, we happen to have a Neptune T-square. Neptune's in Libra, and it's squaring the Uranus on the one side, it's squaring the Venus on the other, it's in the first house, and Neptune's Lord of Pisces, so this person is totally confused concerning all these areas. It might be a life of tremendous challenge. If they would have conquered this aspect, they would be a very successful individual. If they would be taking life and relationships and friends and goals personal and feeling defeatist and fatalistic about the whole thing, they could be miserable about the whole thing. So just by looking at a simple planetary aspect from one planet, Venus, in a chart, we could actually feel a person's soul and see about their values. Now, if you met someone that had Venus in Capricorn in the fourth house, suppose Uranus in Cancer in the 10th, and square Neptune in Libra in the first, you right away you might shudder and say, gosh, this person's got a lot of karma. Well, if you have any cardinal planets in aspect to that Venus, then you will be their karma. Let's say you have Venus in Aries at 10, their Venus is in Capricorn at 10, their Uranus is in Capricorn at 9, and their Neptune's in Libra at 12, bingo. Then you're going to be attracted to this puppy like a moth to a flame. And then between the two charts, we have a grand square and a grand cross and a heck of a lot to be learned and worked through in a relationship. And I've known people to get married with stuff like that. And these are oftentimes relationships that think it is absolutely essential to fight through the whole relationship. And these are also individuals that also many times might feel it's normal to fight and argue and have problems emotionally and mentally on a concurrent basis because of all that karma. I mean, there's a lot of things to know. See, like, by knowing this, don't you see the beauty in this topic? By knowing these aspects and knowing about these planetary combinations, then you can see why, if you were this person with the Venus in Capricorn opposed Uranus in Cancer, T-square Neptune in Libra, why you'd be so obsessed with home and real estate and residence from Venus in the fourth house, and why you'd be so obsessed with career from Uranus in the 10th, and why you'd be so obsessed with goals and friends because the Uranus rules goals and friends, and why intelligence and communication and friendship and fulfilling your wildest dreams from Neptune, the Piscean Lord, in Libra, which is relationships, why you might focus on home, residence, career, goal, and relationships, and why the answer might be to overcome this entire aspect. Once again, the answer to overcoming anything in astrology to retain a spiritual perspective. Because you know where we get hung up? We get hung up, and the beauty about astrology is that we find out which areas of study we are here to learn. We find out why we are so addicted to this stuff. Why it is so important we have a warm body. Why it is so important we have a certain type of resonance. Why it is so important that we accomplish certain goals or have certain dreams or track certain elements that are literally impossible to have perfection and balance, but we still try it. When all we're really being asked To absolve karma in the natal chart or in life in general is to just retain a spiritual perspective. I, for one, would probably be dead right now if I did not somehow overcome a major percentage of the karma in my chart. I thank goodness that I could read the squares to my Scorpio moon, the square to my Neptune, and the square to my Venus, and I am still affected, even though I have come so far in my growth, and I try every day to retain a spiritual balance and to respect the inner workings of my soul and the spiritual relationship I have to all beings and to God, right? Even so, I still get upset by a ridiculous loss in a football game last night in the Rams and the Niners. It bothers me. It brings me down. Why? Because I'm addicted to being a fan of a sports team in a city that I love, Los Angeles. Now, that's not very spiritual. You can imagine how the team feels. But you see, we always have the choice. The Libra symbology is the balance scales. On the right side of the scales is earth, power, money, materialism. And that is limitation. That is an illusion. That is something that is a miniature experience. On the right side of the balance scale, we have the infinite. We have the eternal. We have the true wealth of life, spirit. And by analyzing an astrology chart, literally, we are able to focus on those areas of our lives that detract from the spirit. That's why so many people that are into New Age thought are into meditation and prayer and visualizations and chakra balancings and astral projection and understanding past life regressions, reincarnation, and karma, because they want to balance their spirit, because they have found that is the area of true bliss. And the vibration we absorb at birth, this planetary vibration that we analyze to understand our selfishness, our obsession, our karma, and such, those are the areas which we must process and let go of. People say, well, Farley, I have Mars in Scorpio, and it's square Uranus in Leo, and it's square my ascendant in Leo, and I'm obsessed with men, love, and relationships. I'm a woman or whatever, a gay guy, whatever. What should I do? Well, if you're a martyr, if you're sadistic, if you like pain, then go for it. You know, tackle your karma. You can be like unto a monk. There's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of people that live a spiritual lifestyle, whether it's celibate or not. They don't take relationships as personal. They're more James Bondish about the whole thing. Let's have a good time. I'm okay. You're okay. If things don't work out, I go my way, you go your way. But still, no regrets, no remorse, no guilt, and we still have the spirit. And God bless it. And the rest of the people out there torture themselves when they have failure. They freak out. They forget about the spirit. They don't know about meditation or prayer or balancing or centering or grounding to the planet Earth and the universe. They don't know about any of that. And that's why they throw themselves into lifestyle situations that are like being on a big 100,000-ton anchor. Well, this topic went someplace I didn't expect it to go. Sometimes I get wrapped up in these things. See what happens when you're holding a couple of big pieces of blue celestite? You completely go berserk. Planetary vibrations. Understanding some of the vibrations connected to the planets in our chart. Once again, combining the sign the planet's in, the house the planet's in, the aspects that planet has to other planets, what signs they're in, what signs they rule, you know, what signs they epitomize, and then understanding the ramifications of the aspect to zero in on the karma so we can overcome it and once again return to the spirit. The formula is simple. No matter what the karma is, returning to the spirit is always the key to balance as far as I'm concerned.